Hear that? It's the sound of someone whacking the ground with a rake. Specifically, they're beating around the bush, which we've done enough of in this ad too, so let's get right to it. The new Moneymaker scratch-off from the Ohio Lottery doesn't beat around the bush. Moneymaker. Play the game and you could win money. Up to $2 million. With more than $88 million in prizes, ranging from $50 to $500, Moneymaker cuts right to the cash. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, the world's most exciting podcast, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, New York Times best-selling author and National Radio Hall of Fame inductee, Michael Savage.
Welcome to the free version of the Michael Savage podcast, and I'm going to keep it free for all of you. But there are many of you who would love to be able to listen to my show without any ads. I love ads, but many of you want to listen to the podcast free of ads. So we created something for you, a solution. We call it the Savage Premium. For less than the price of one flat, tasteless beer at your local bar, you can receive access to all of my podcasts going back years ad-free for just $3.99. That's it, $3.99 a month. You'll get not only my ad-free podcast, but you will also occasionally receive access to material that is exclusive for members only, and I'm going to give you the list in a minute of what you've missed. You're going to get an occasional monologue from me, maybe a reading from one of my novels, sneak peeks of interviews before anyone else hears them, archive pieces dating back to 1994. Many things that come up, you're going to get exclusive access to Michael Savage material. Details can be seen on my website, michaelsavage.com, and if you want to join, all you got to do is go to glow.fm and search Savage Premium. That's glow.fm and search Savage Premium. Now, you will always have access to my free weekly podcast. I want to be clear about that. That's my promise to you. But if you want less ads and more Savage, join the Savage Premium Club today and never miss a spoken word of mine. It's glow.fm/savagepremium. You can find it on michaelsavage.com. And here's some of the stuff that you have missed so far. Michael Savage reading from his best-selling novel, Countdown to Mecca. My words, my voice. Savage reads from one of his lost journals, Fiji, 1968. Savage's first drive-time show, Hour One. My interview with the Jewish gangster, very popular. I read from my first written published article, Who Is at the Helm?, from 1965. It's heard nowhere but on my premium site. I read passages from my novel, Abuse of Power. We replayed Fat Al's Tuna. My Savage show from 324.94, the earliest show in the archive, 324.94. My interview with Donald Trump from 110.2011. 110.2011, while Mark Levin was mocking him and Sean Hannity was mocking him and the others were mocking him, I was interviewing Trump. Much more. And remember, subscribers also get ad-free podcasts every week. The cost is less than a beer at a bar, and you get a better buzz with the Savage Premium. So go to glow.fm/savagepremium for full access to ad-free podcasts and exclusive sound you'll not hear anywhere else. Thank you very much. Welcome to the Michael Savage Podcast. We're going to do a number of different things today, a potpourri. On Tuesday's podcast, I played my latest interview with the great President Trump. And during that interview, I brought up the supply chain problem and how it's affecting myself and other people who can't even get their prescriptions filled.
Before you go, and I have a million questions that I know you don't have time for, such as what would you do to fix the supply chain problem? No, I couldn't even get a prescription that I've been waiting for now for a week.
You can't.
I feel like I'm living in
the book that you just said, which is doing great. It's doing so. We make an order for 300,000 more books, and the printer, who's one of the biggest in the country, says, "Sir, I can't get the paper. I can't get the glue. I can't get the ink."
That's what I hear.
He said, "I've been doing this stuff for 40 years. I've never had a problem getting paper before." It's supply chain. In all fairness, it wasn't even something that was on our mind. The supply chain was automatic. It was automatic. It was said. It was beautiful. But with their mandates and with all of the other things they've done, they have destroyed the supply chain. And I was in California recently looking at one of the properties I have, and I passed the area where the ships come in with the big, what would you call them? The storage facilities. And I have never seen anything like what I saw there. You couldn't move. These containers are, they must be 10, 15 on top of each other. If they don't do something, that stuff will never get out. It's really bad. I mean, no. It's gotten worse. Nobody's talking about it now. But the containers coming off the ships, Michael, you wouldn't believe. And I passed this site for 15 years, and you'd hardly see a container. You know, they'd get off the boat and they'd be delivered. Now they get off the boat and they just pile it up to the sky. It's crazy.
I boat through Oakland, through the Oakland Estuary, which is a big port.
Right.
They act like the Empire State Building, President Trump.
Yep.
And things are
riding. Got a long way to go for getting it taken care of, I'll tell you. And this wasn't something, the word supply chain, this is not like a big topic because it was automatic. It worked. It worked beautifully.
Right.
But they've broken up our system, and they're breaking up our system in a lot of other ways. And that includes borders and election. We have crooked elections and we have open borders and millions of people coming into this country that are destroying our country.
Now, I warned you 2 years ago about how this was going to be a problem when I interviewed author Rosemary Gibson about America's dependence on medications made in China. I do not know whether I was the first, and it doesn't really matter. All I know is I was one of the first, Paul Revere's, to alert you to our dependence upon China for everything, including our medications. Now, here's a topic that none of the politicians talked about at any of the debates, nor has the President of the United States talked about it. Where does your penicillin come from? Your vitamin C? Your other drugs? Your other over-the-counter products? They come from the United States? Where do your antibiotics, antidepressants, birth control pills, cancer drugs, blood pressure medicines? You think they're made here in the U.S.? You're wrong. They come from China. And there's a big risk right now because we're so dependent on China for medicine. And the government is hiding this from you, that with the throwing of a switch, they could cut off your drugs. Even your vitamin C is not made here anymore. I don't know if you know this. It's an important book called China RX by Rosemary Gibson, who is joining us right now on the Savage Nation. Pay very close attention because neither party will tell you what you're about to hear because all of them are sold out and owned by the lobbyists. Rosemary Gibson, thank you for being with us on the Savage Nation. Great book.
Well, thank you for having me to talk about this very important subject.
You know, when I looked at your book, I was alarmed enough to see that all of our drugs are controlled by them. But with the wide-scale dispensing of drugs to our military, what if China cut off the antidepressants that are so frequently given out to our sailors and our soldiers? What would happen then?
And what happens if we cut off the antibiotics and the medicines needed for surgery?
Right. And they own it all. They control it all. None of them are made here in the U.S. anymore, Rosemary?
The core ingredients is where China has a chokehold on the global supply.
Boy, are they smart. Just like they cornered the market on the essential elements of our electronics industry, they did so with our drug industry. And it happened literally right under our noses, didn't it?
It really did, but I'll tell you, it took a long time to figure this out. I started working on this in 2014. It took 3 years to figure it out and to tell the story in China RX. And I predicted there that in the event of a natural disaster or global pandemic, the United States will stand in line behind other countries.
What about if we see the drug labels are also deceptive, aren't they? Some of them make believe they're, in other words, they're manufactured in the U.S., but the raw ingredients are coming from China is a lot of the truth, right?
Well, it's all over the map. So let's take the medicines needed for caring for people, say if they have real severe coronavirus and they're in the hospital.
Okay.
So let's take those medicines.
Okay.
If you might be on a ventilator, mechanical ventilator to help you breathe. You might go into shock or have a secondary infection. So I was sitting having dinner with a bunch of people that actually make medicines.
Mm-hmm.
So where do the core chemicals come to make these medicines.
Mm.
I went around the room, each of them, they have 100 years experience doing the work they do, and each of them said 90%, 90%, 90%.
How did we get to this point of letting China take over our prescription drug market, Rosemary Gibson?
Well, first of all, nobody wanted to talk about it. And since China Rx came out in April 18, there's just no advocacy for it other than the public that's apoplectic about it and our military, because it's been hidden from us. But how it happened was, you know, we went to generic drugs, which have been really a boon for all of us. But then when we opened up free trade with China in 2000, and they joined the World Trade Organization in 2001, I mean, who knew our trade policy would have such an impact?
Hmm.
So it became...
But you, Rosemary, this is true about both parties, right? This is not limited to one party or the other. Both of them are owned by the China lobby, right?
This is across the board. Many mothers and fathers here own this, and it's been hidden, and nobody has been able to talk about it.
So let's say I use a lot of vitamin C powder, which I have for many, many years. I've known for years that it was made in Japan. It never bothered me because the Japanese are very high-quality drug manufacturing. But according to your book, the Chinese are now making most of the powdered vitamin C?
What they make is the ascorbic acid.
Yeah.
The active ingredient.
Of course.
I found it real. There's one small plant in New Jersey making a specialized ascorbic acid, and there's one small plant in Europe, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Because there was a time that we made most of our drugs here in America, correct?
Absolutely. I call it the industrial equivalent of home cooking.
We'll be right back after this quick break.
Michael Savage, a host like no other.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
How do we get control back? Look, the book is so important, called China Rx, Exposing the Risks of America's Dependence on China for Medicine. In some ways, this is not 100% new to me. I do have a PhD from UC Berkeley, but I have a previous master's degree in pharmacology. So I've seen this happening over the years, which is why I had Rosemary Gibson on the show today. I want America to wake up. Can we do anything about this?
Well, sure we can. The first thing we need to do is to bring some of our manufacturing back to the United States for those essential medicines. We don't have to make all of them here.
Mm-hmm.
We need, you know, basic self-sufficiency. We have a thing called the Strategic National Stockpile that's there for emergencies.
Okay.
It's, you know, like Hurricane Sandy or something like that. And 85% of that, what's in there, depends on China.
Good God.
Good thing. So
you have a chapter called The Vitamin C and Penicillin Cartels. They even control our penicillin raw ingredients?
Absolutely. Yes, this is how China does it. It's not just because China's cheaper. Chinese companies form cartels, they fix the prices, they sell them really cheap, below market, and they drive everybody out.
God.
And when they got global dominant market share, then they raised the price.
And that's what they did to our electronics industry originally in Japan. They dumped cars, they killed our car manufacturers, and they did the TVs and the electronics, dumping again. Now China's doing it with medicine, with antibiotics, chemotherapies, antidepressants, HIV/AIDS drugs, medicines for Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, birth control, all made in China, sold in the U.S., and we all think they're made in the U.S.?
Well, there's no real country of origin labeling. It's all obfuscation.
Mm. Now, that's the beginning of the solution, I think, which is a country of origin labeling. Don't you think that would help?
That would help. But, you know, I think the house is burning down, and so we've got to put out the fire. So if I had to put political energy into something, it's let's bring some of that manufacturing back here. We have tremendous technology to be able to make medicines here that's much cheaper, smaller environmental footprint, at lower cost. We have brilliant minds here. We've got to invest in them. And plus, once we do it, we just can't put it on the open market. We have to have long-term contracts, say, with California public sector employees or, you know, the DOD, Department of Defense, or the VA, or the Strategic National Stockpile. Otherwise, China will come in and undercut. So we have to treat it as a national security asset.
I agree. Now, I have another issue here, which is generic drugs. I've always tried to avoid generic drugs my entire life because my former professor was the director of research at one of the major American pharmaceutical firms, and he told me generics are generally garbage. And now, according to your book, I'm finding out that most of the generics are made in China and India, and they are garbage. Is that true or false?
Well, here's the fact is that 9% of our generic drugs now, finished drugs, the pills we take, are made in China. 25% come from India. But India, its generic industry would collapse without Chinese core ingredients. So all roads lead to China. Back in the day, there were what was called authorized generics. So the company that made the brand name product,
right,
went generic. You have that, quote, authorized generic that was made by that company, same formulation.
Okay.
Which one is better? Well, what I like is a new startup company up in New Haven, and they're an online pharmacy, and they test every product before they sell it. They test batches of each product.
Mm-hmm.
And if we want
to... I'm sorry, we're speaking about China Rx, the risks of America's dependence on China for medicine with the author, Rosemary Gibson. In your book, where you ask, are drugs from China safe? You quoted a longtime industry employee, Cheryl Neath, who said, and I'm quoting, I have stopped taking vitamins because the components are mostly Chinese made, even if the tablets or capsules are made in the United States, and there's minimal oversight of supplements like vitamins. That's still true, correct?
That's true, and that's from somebody who worked in the industry for more than 30 years.
So we're literally ingesting. It's like a Russian roulette. We don't know what we're putting in our bodies anymore.
Well, look what happened with the blood pressure medicine. They had carcinogens in them. Millions of people around the world got it. They were recalled, the longest recall, I think, in FDA history. And
is the FDA not doing its job? Are they involved with the problem?
The FDA is part of the problem, but the industry has allowed this to happen. And to me, it's like FAA and Boeing.
You have another chapter here, contaminated toothpaste in U.S. hospitals and hotels. What's that about?
That was a number of years ago where there was antifreeze put in products because it was a cheaper ingredient.
Oh, they put a little diethylene glycol in the toothpaste. Very nice.
Yes, like remember the pet food, thousands of Americans, they lost their beloved dogs and cats because of pet food that was contaminated with an industrial chemical.
Wow.
And
you know, I can see why there's such a movement in this country of people going back to the earth, of growing their own foods, growing their own herbs, and going off all medicines and vitamins altogether. It's a shocker to read this book.
Well,
have you shaken up the FDA with this book? Are they coming awake, Rosemary, at all? Are they coming around to you?
I will say that in a year and a half that this book has been out, I've had the privilege of briefing senior-level government officials and testifying on Capitol Hill, and people are shocked. And the sad part is that they are shocked that people did not know, or those that did know did nothing to act on it.
It's a huge topic that's requiring a Senate hearing, but they're too busy impeaching the president in Congress rather than protecting the American people. This is an example of an over-politicized nation. Instead of doing the people's work and protecting the people, they're attacking the other party, both sides, in order for personal gain. Don't you think we should have congressional hearings on this?
Well, there have been hearings, but we've got to get people to act. You know, I look at who are the big purchasers of medicines. They're the hospitals,
okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And I've done grand rounds at hospitals, and I ask the question, so why do you contract with suppliers that supply you with substandard medicines that are in persistent shortage? Why do you do that?
And the answer? Do they have an answer?
I'm still waiting.
You're still waiting for the answer. Well, this is a very alarming topic, but it's right up my alley. Because I have used vitamins myself for 40 years. I used to be in the a consultant to the vitamin industry, and I knew about good manufacturing practices, and I knew about shysters on Long Island who were pumping out pills in garages to make their fortunes. And I was trying to alert America to that, and I knew that there were good manufacturers of herbs. I knew there were shysters knocking out pills in Salt Lake City in their toilets, in their garbage, making really junk until eventually the industry cleaned itself up. Is this ever going to clean up? Are we ever going to clean the pharmaceutical industry up, do you think, in our lifetime?
Well, I've been putting this out as a national security issue.
It is.
It's poor quality medicines is not going to get people in Washington out of their chairs, but a national security threat will.
You're right.
So that's what I've been going with and regrettable.
You know, you have a chapter, these drugs can reach anyone, including the president. That's very interesting, isn't it?
That's right. Well, the medicines we're talking about are used by members of Congress, occupants of the White House, and all their staffs, and the military. Mm. There was a retired military guy who testified at a hearing. He was testifying as a commissioner in the U.S.-China Commission. And he said, I got contaminated blood pressure medicine. It was made in India. The ingredient came from China. And the ingredient had rocket fuel in it.
No, there you go. They had to get rid of it somehow. It's an alarming story and a worthwhile book. And the book is called China Rx by Rosemary Gibson, Exposing the Risks of America's Dependence on China for Medicine. Rosemary, boy, you are an investigative reporter of the best kind, if you want to call yourself that. Whatever you call yourself, you're doing great work here. It's a shame that both parties are so corrupt that we're unlikely to see any changes in the very near future. Thank you so much, Rosemary, for being with us.
I want your listeners to know that we donate proceeds to good causes. No one paid me to do this book.
Hmm.
Someone said people would pay you not to write it.
Wow.
So I hope people will go out and buy it. It's on Amazon. Share it with your family, your friends, your members of Congress, your doctors, your pharmacists. People need to know this. And call up your elected officials and say, we need to bring our medicine making back home. We don't want medicines made in China.
Good job. Good job, Rosemary Gibson. Thank you for being on the Savage Nation. Look, I just want to tie a little knot around this, if I can, before we leave this subject. Can you imagine a national health emergency where we needed penicillin and there was none, or China cut us off? Can you imagine? Now, I want you to understand why this is happening and how it happened. Take a look at Adam Schiff. Take a look at those on the Senate Intelligence Committee, on the House Intelligence Committee, and take a look at what they've done for the last number of years. Have they once talked about this? No. They've spent all of their time attacking Donald Trump. If you want to know what negligence is, look no further than the Senate Intelligence Committee and the House Intelligence Committees, and you'll understand why this country is sinking into the muck. And it's not because of Donald Trump.
The Savage Nation. It's Savage on Demand.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to LibsynAds.com now. That's LibsynAds.com.
Now, last week, I played part one of my interview with Dr. Marilyn Singleton about Black History Month, and I promised to play for you part two. Well, here it is now on the Savage Nation podcast. And if you like any of the podcasts today, you have a job to do, and that is to share it with at least one person. Thank you for listening. You raised some very interesting points in the article, It's Black History Month, Let's Get Real. And I have to thank Black History Month for getting me so agitated. And you're writing this article, giving me the opportunity to interview you again on this subject. And maybe they're giving me the opportunity to put up some, you know, like, what the hell are you doing to us? Why do you know where you're even dragging us? Do you have any idea that we'll reach a point where surgeons cannot perform surgery if you keep this up? Pilots will not be able to get in the cockpit of a plane and start the engines. That's what's going to happen.
Well, the thing is, these folks are going to be okay, but two things are happening, and they've already noticed it, is if you put somebody in school, and this goes back to college, and it's a school that really is beyond where they would have been accepted had it not been, where it's not even affirmative action anymore. I don't even know what you'd call it now, but it's affirmative action on steroids.
Affirmative dysfunction.
Well, they then drop out. So what's
Wait, say
worse?
That again. What happens? The kids who are pushed into the schools drop out.
They drop out.
Oh, wait, but doctor, they're saying
so far behind their colleagues in school.
But Dr. Singleton, what they're saying is logic is white supremacy. They're pushing it. Literacy is white supremacy. Standards are white supremacy, meaning everything is white supremacy.
Math plus two equals five.
Supremacy. 2 plus 2 is 5 now.
Well, and when they said, and this was in the LA curriculum, that math was white supremacy.
I saw that.
And that it was racist to ask a child to show their work. Well, I remember when I took physics, all they had were slide rules. And I didn't know how to use one. So I told the teacher, I said, I don't know if I can multiply these big numbers this fast. And he said, that's all right. That, you know, you could be off a decimal point or whatever. He said, I want to see the work. And that's where you mentioned the word logic. Seeing the work is what's important. It's not the right answer, because you can always get the right answer with the calculator. But people have to learn to think. And that's what they don't want. They want people to be little automatons that you can put an algorithm in front of them. They'll follow it. They'll learn to do exactly what you said and not think for themselves. I want a doctor who thinks for him or herself. You read the literature, you look at the data, and then you think for yourself.
I remember slide rules. My uncle gave me one. I was in high school, and they're actually hard to use correctly. Incidentally, slide rules are not easy, but the Golden Gate Bridge was built with slide rules. I say that when I draw it to people. Built in 2.5 years, built with slide rules, no computers.
And look at it now.
Somehow the North Tower and the South Tower, the roadways connected. They were able to connect the roadways because they use logic, scientific method, reason, hard mathematics, and slide rules. So this affirmative dysfunction that we are talking about, the question I raise for you today, doctor, this is I'm a man who respects credentials and education. That's why I love Dr. Singleton, board certified anesthesiologist. Graduated from Stanford and earned her MD at UCSF. Great school. Still a great school, I believe. You completed 2 years of surgery residency at UCSF. Great school. Then your anesthesia residency at Harvard's Beth Israel. Great school. And here's the part that I say, how did she do this? While still working in the operating room, she attended UC Berkeley Law School, focusing on constitutional law and administrative law, and you got your JD? How did you do that?
Well, I guess it was, I don't know. Wait a minute. How could I have done that? I'm a descendant of a slave.
No, I didn't mean it that way. How could any human being
I know. I'm just.
I know you went around the joke.
But
but how did you, as a descendant of slaves, do that, by the way?
Well, that's where it was lucky that I was an anesthesiologist, because I could work on weekends and do some night call and go to school.
Oh, you could select time.
That I could select the time that I worked. And law school was just down the street from my hospital. So that made it very easy. And then when you go to law school, when you're an older person, you realize a lot of what you're learning is common sense. In contrast, when you're 21 years old. So having some life experience behind you is a big help.
Well, when Donald Trump wins the presidency again, you've got to become Surgeon General. I'm joking. I had to throw that.
Please, Lord, keep me out of the government.
I know. But look, we've been around the society quite a long while. I mean, you entered medical school in the late 60s, for God's sakes. I went back to school. My undergrad degree was in 1963, a Bachelor of Science at Queens College. So, I'm turning 80 this March, which I can't believe.
You are?
I can't believe it.
Can't believe it.
I know.
Well, congratulations.
Well, every night I have to tell the Grim Reaper, go to hell. I'm not ready for you. There's someone around on the other side of the way. Go pick someone out. But, you do realize time marches on and time doesn't stop for anyone and all of that. So we've seen cycles, Dr. Singleton, of up and down the left wing. You know, we've seen it all. The Black Power movement in the 60s was reprehensible and in a way far more violent than BLM is right now. The era of H-Rap Brown, the militants in the street with the guns. I remember the 60s, the judge being knocked off here by Angela Davis and her friends up in Marin County. Shotgun in a courtroom right here in Marin County. So things were a lot almost worse. And then Tampa went down. Now we're back coming up to a fever pitch.
Do you we had Martin Luther King back then, too. You have to remember that was a good counterbalance. And yes, some of the Black Panther rhetoric was, well, you can't do this by peace and you need strength and all this sort of thing. But you had that counterbalance. You had a lot of people who followed the method, the words of Dr. Martin Luther King. And so we think about what words have lasted. The words that lasted were content of character, uniting, judging people not by their skin.
Oh, how
those
quaint.
Are the words that lasted.
They're as quaint as a trolley car.
Well, this is what it is now. It's like his memory is just being trampled
He's
on.
He's been erased by the
radicals. Completely.
Martin Luther King Jr.'s words of don't judge people by the color of the skin, but by the content of their character, have been erased by BLM and the cohorts of the far left. So my question to you, as a woman who is far-seeing enough to have driven yourself so far in life, will this correct in this society?
I think it will, because I see it already turning around. And one of the things, and I'm sure when you get out in the real world and in the streets you see, it is not what you're seeing in the media. You look at people walking down the street. They're a mixed group of people, Asians and Hispanics and Blacks and whites, a big group of guys on their way to the beach to go pick up girls, whatever. You know, people are just people. I'm in the grocery store and, you know, people offering you some food they just bought because it was the last one on the shelf. They aren't doing it because, oh, she's Black, I better be nice to her. No, they're just people being nice.
Are you sure they're not pandering?
Well, it's what's funny you ask that, but because of the environment that's been created, people think that were they just being nice to me or are they really being nice? And I, in my heart of hearts, think, no, they're just really just being nice because people are basically
sorry,
nice.
You're not cynical enough for me, Dr. Singleton.
Well, you know, yes, there are evil people. Yes, there are nasty people. But everyone isn't nasty and evil.
Well, you're a good person. You're a good
telling
person.
People they're nasty and evil isn't going to make them nice. I mean,
No. Goethe, the great German poet, wrote that if you take a man as he is, you make him worse. If you treat him as he can be, you can make him better. And I've always seen that as a very idealistic view of mankind, humankind. Mm-hmm. You know, if you take a man as he is, you make him worse. You say to the criminal junkie, you're nothing but a criminal junkie, he'll be a worse criminal and a worse junkie.
When you give him a crack pipe.
Taking it right back. You brought it right back home, to use a jazz phrase. But yeah, we're doing music today, you and I. And so you brought it back to the original point.
We'll be right back. The Savage Nation. It's savage, uncut, unfiltered, and raw.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
We're back with Dr. Marilyn Singleton. Who the hell would give a crack pipe to a crack addict other than an insane government official, Joe Biden? Who gives clean needles to junkies and doesn't expect it to get worse, which it has in San Francisco with all the clean needles. They're shooting up everywhere. What would you expect?
But the thing is, something that's this stupid, you have to believe is on purpose. That how, maybe they can be that stupid, I don't know, but how many people can get sucked in to think that that's the so-called equity, which is, of course, yet another whole conversation, how we got from equality to equity.
I thought
where everybody has to end up the same. Everybody
communism.
Isn't the same.
Communism, communism, communism.
There you go. That it just drums it in. And our version of what you were talking about with the Chinese coming in your home and taking your artifacts and any trappings that you might be thinking for yourself, they're doing that with our words now. And our words are, well, next to our thoughts, are the last thing we have to express our individuality, that we are people. And once they slap those labels on, and then they take away your own individual thoughts, there you are. We might as well get those little shoes with the little strap across the top, our People's Republic of China shoes, and change our blouses.
Because the blue uniforms that everyone wore.
That's where we're headed.
You know, maybe when they get to the point where they do start killing all the dogs, as they did in China, because they were considered bourgeois. You know, they killed all the dogs in China after the Mao's revolution. Do people
that's
even
right.
know that? Now, of course, there's a middle class in China that's emerged with capitalism and mixed capitalism. That we see in China, and a lot of them have these beautiful little dogs. I'm a dog lover, but can you imagine what would happen if these lunatics who were giving out crack pipes like Joe Biden then got it in his head from whoever's advising him, what the maniacs are around him, say, you know, all these pets are very bourgeois. They're bad for the environment. The pets are bad for global warming because of all the fecal matter. They're bad for the food chain because they're eating food that could go for people. You've got to turn your pet in to your local cop because we can't have pets anymore. Maybe that would be the trigger finally for them to realize.
It's very interesting because, you know, you talk about looking for a trigger. Look at how the moms spoke up over masking children day in and day out and not having children play outdoors in recess, even if the wind's blowing, that they had to have a mask on. And that got mothers' backs up. And PETA is very strong, and there's a lot of outrage when there is something done to animals. Look at what happened when the monkeys that were probably infected with something
that fell out of the truck.
Yes. And there was outrage. Look at what happened when they had to shoot that tiger that some fool stuck their arm in the tiger cage. People were more upset about the tiger than they were about the person, although it looks like he brought it on himself. That people do get outraged when animals are not treated properly. And maybe it will do something. You know, interestingly, I was reading something about movie ratings, and something gets a worse rating if there's slaughter of animals than if there's slaughter of people. So there is, you know, something about animals.
Oh, Lord. Well, that maybe it'll be the final trigger, but we shouldn't keep it hush hush because we don't want Biden's advisors to know that. Maybe they're planning to seize anyone who has more than one pet. You have to turn in the other pets. You know, there's a story today that agitated me and I tweeted about it. And it's about a 79-year-old great grandfather in Ottawa, Canada, 5'2". Went out in the street with a truck convoy was going by, honking. He honked his horn. They show a cop, big cop with a gun in his hip, shackling him and throwing him to the ground and arresting him for honking his horn.
This whole Canada thing, that's another thing that's getting to me. Canadians are generally quite mild-mannered.
Oh, yes.
And accepting of delays and getting food or whatever. And they're the ones who have protested. And no matter what you think about vaccines, you know, I think most people, even when they have vaccines, don't like the idea of mandates because they see that as the beginning of the end. And
the beginning of the end of what? Of personal freedom.
Of personal freedom. And that Canadians were the ones that have been vocal. And so that makes me sit back and wonder, what has happened to Americans? Yes, we've had some protests, but nothing is massive.
Nothing.
Like the solidarity.
Nothing.
And doesn't that disturb you?
It disturbs me deeply that we have completely acquiesced. The land of the free and the home of the brave. We become the land of the freak and the home of the bray, as I used to say. We're nothing but sheeple right now in this country. And the loudest voices are the most vicious and the meanest. And they're the ones driving this whole nonsense that we're talking about. Well, Dr. Singleton, you and I could go on, I think, for another hour. And I know you're a busy surgeon who has to get back to surgery. Are there any last words for the Savage Nation podcast audience about your article? It's Black History Month. Let's get real. Any final words from Dr. Singleton?
My final words, and remember, anesthesiologist, not surgeon. We don't want any misinformation now, do
okay.
we? You'll find yourself in jail.
Okay.
the final words are be yourself. Be happy. Try not to let that outside noise infiltrate and get into your system, because it will destroy you. And it's time for us to step up and say, wait a minute, none of this is true about me. I'm a decent person, whether Dr. Savage thinks so or not.
Well, what you said, you know, you gave me hope when you talked about white people here, the way you put it, where you said,
white people aren't stamped with the mark of the devil.
Yeah, I love that one. I thought that was so well written. White people are not stamped with the mark of the devil. Every friendly gesture is not a feeble attempt at reparations, just a fellow human being being cheerful. Boy, I wish more people could see it that way. And I don't know how we're going to stop this insanity.
Well, you have to not listen. You know, the old thing that they were saying, you know why the Amish didn't have a lot of COVID?
No.
No. Why? And they said, because we don't watch television.
That's very funny.
And that's how we have to be about this.
But it's true. Is it true that they had a low incidence of COVID?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's because they're an insular community.
Right. You know, but it's the whole thing. We have to, and I'm not saying never watch television, but it's kind of more figurative than literal, that don't believe everything you see. Don't let all that stuff soak in, because it's not true. Look around you. See what people are doing around you. See how nice people are. See the fact that somebody in Mississippi during the tornadoes has white and black people in their basement. That did they tell the black people stay out and get sucked away in the tornado? No, they were just being good neighbors. This is who real people are.
Oh, it's a very religious viewpoint, which is decency and charity and, you know, lead by example. I mean, the Hasidic teaching, the Jewish mystical teaching from Chabad is if you do one kind deed, you can change the world. And the point is that if every human being did one kind deed every day, it would alter it would shift the polarity of the whole universe.
That's right. And suddenly being ugly is the outlier. And it's just like what happened with litter. It used to be people threw litter. And now if you see somebody throw litter, it's, how could you possibly do that?
Yeah, I've noticed that. The same observation, which is that at some point in the 50s, I grew up, it was like people threw stuff out of the car windows, cigarettes, candy wrappers. Nobody would do that. And that's what I'm afraid of. The mind control and the training from the government media complex is so strong that if we don't speak out against this, we will all be enslaved.
You got it.
Well, you wrote it, and I got it.
Home of borders, language, culture, the Savage Nation.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
We're speaking with Dr. Marilyn Singleton on the Michael Savage podcast.
When is your book coming out?
Oh, I wish. Boy, have I sat down and then you get busy and then you get something done. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you did all the shows and everything and still cranked out all that.
I'm dizzy from it. I look back to the years. Are we still recording? Yeah. You know, I'm looking back. I'm doing two podcasts a week and I'm doing four TV shows a week. Now, 5 minutes on Newsmax TV and working on a new book for next year. It's really all I want to do. People say, gee, go back on the radio. First of all, I'm boycotted. I was canceled. But that's not the point. God did me a favor. Don't need it. Don't want it. Thank you. Did that. It's in my rearview mirror. I don't know how. I don't know how. And I don't want it again. And I'm trying to get control of everything I've created. I've hired an archivist to go back and get notes and papers and collections. And I'm going through manuscripts I've written that no one's ever seen, all my fiction. I'm just speaking with a literary editor. People don't even know about this. Hundreds of pages of manuscripts. And so I don't know. Those days are behind me. And sometimes you don't know where your energy came from or why you were driven like that. And can you stop?
Well, I kind of know I'll probably never stop and you probably never will, but that's the good thing. It's like Dr. Andrew Weil's graph of life. Instead of good health, and then at 40, do like this. It's like health, 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 then drop dead. So that's, you know, that's
well,
the way it
I don't know that I want to drop dead before you know, but on the other hand, I don't want to go into that decline where I don't know who I am.
Well, that's his thing. You know, you eat right and the stuff you write about, you know, with nutrition and all that sort of thing, that you can stay at pretty much a good level. I mean, eventually we all have to drop dead. So, you know, at least
in your experience dealing with people as a doctor, how long can people function at a high level mentally, age wise?
I'd say of older patients that I saw, probably more than half were still pretty sharp, even at 80. But then it's sort of a self-selected group because when I saw them, even when I did my pain management practice, these were people who were able to get in the car and drive over to the office. I mean, all these things sound silly, but when you add them up.
No, no, that's a function, of course.
You know, it self-selects who I'm going to see. And we see the bright people on television, you know, the Alan Dershowitz, you know, who were in their 80s and still very sharp and all that sort of thing. But then you see Joe Biden, who's more representative of somebody in his age group. And I certainly...
Doesn't Biden exhibit presenile dementia or outright dementia in your mind?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we're not technically, ethically, you don't diagnose somebody unless you actually examine them. Okay, let's give that.
Oh, he's I worked in the Alzheimer's world for a while. He's clearly presenile dementia and he's going downhill fast in my estimation. And I'm willing to say it, but I say that for a reason. As I said to you, I do four TV appearances a week on Newsmax TV. And one of the reasons I do it is, A, I enjoy it because I have a streak of narcissism in me that likes to be seen and show off and all that. But there's another reason. I watch the tapes of them afterwards and put them on YouTube and on my show. The day I see that my computational skills are faltering, where I'm not firing at a quick enough rate, I will disappear from the landscape of the media completely. I watch it as a diagnostic tool in my own life.
Which is good because that's how you want to be remembered. That you don't want to be remembered as a doddering old fool.
No, I don't want to be Biden. I don't want to be remembered as a Biden-esque individual. No, I do not. No, it's embarrassing. Biden is embarrassing.
You were really a trailblazer to me in the mold of Rush Limbaugh, where people really started to listen to talk radio. And you started to tell it like it is. I mean, that's why he got in trouble. But hey, you know, people needed it. And
I used to say when I started in radio, to the right of Rush, to the left of God.
Oh, that's bad.
Isn't that a good statement? Because you know God is definitely a right winger, and he takes no prisoners. That's how I see it. He takes no prisoners. He has no room for foolishness. Don't screw with him.
But this is what we need now. And you look at, the cable group, I have Frontier, Fios, and they have OAN. Spectrum does not have OAN. And if you didn't have OAN news, you'd never hear about any of this stuff. We watch MSNBC and CNN just to see what they're saying about stuff. And a lot of the big faux pas that Biden made, that's like when Biden said, They hide it. When he said, poor kids are just as smart as white kids.
Oh, God.
Do you get
what do we have here? No, but do you get Newsmax TV? We have.
Yes, I get Newsmax.
Well, I'll be on tonight, by the way. I'm on Monday night, Wednesday night in the 5 o'clock hour.
And okay.
Thursday night in the 6 o'clock hour, and I'm on Saturday at 3 o'clock. So I have a pretty regular schedule of my little 4 minutes of fame kind of stuff. So.
I'll have to go record it.
But I tweet it every time we're on, or I put it on Facebook. Uh-huh. But as I say, it does keep me focused, and also the world's changing so fast, I've got to do my little attempt at stopping it. Yeah, but Biden has pre-senile dementia, or would you say dementia?
I would say dementia. The thing is, you notice it at the time he has his speeches, that he has to do it in the daytime, and, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning, his time, or,
God.
No later than 1. You start to look at these things, and the way he wants to talk, but then his people keep on saying, that's it now, that's it now.
And he wants to keep going, just like a person in old. He doesn't want the visit to end. You're
right,
the old
exactly.
age home or the assisted living, and you visit this guy, and he's happy because people are paying attention, and he wants to keep going, and they say, I've got to stop now. The saddest thing I saw is when he reaches for some imaginary rails, and like this, clenches up in the middle of a speech, like he's holding on to some imaginary totems. What is he doing?
Well, and then he does things that don't make sense. Poor Justice Breyer, when he gave his little goodbye and I'm retiring, he goes to leave and Biden picks up this old mask. I don't even think it was Justice Breyer's mask, and he hands it to Justice Breyer, and then you see Justice Breyer just kind of stuff it in the pocket.
Oh, like, my God.
I'm not going to use this dirty rag.
Oh.
And, you know, it was kind of, and even Justice Breyer had kind of a look. And I'm sure Justice Breyer is, you know, he clearly had his marbles, and he's older than Biden. And so I'm sure he was doing the same thing to himself as any older person does. You start to question when you can't remember the number or whatever, that you're looking out for this sort of thing. But the look on his face, and that's why I love the internet and all, because when you can actually relook at something and you think, Breyer knows. You know, you could just see.
Yeah.
Breyer, no.
Oh, that's frightening. We're going to end it now, folks.
Okay.
We're ending it right here. But people are going to say, wait a minute, don't cut this out. We want to hear this. We're cutting it out. We want to keep the conversation going, but Dr. Singleton and I will continue to chat where no one can hear us. Dr. Singleton, always a pleasure. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
I will try to do a kind deed today when someone cuts me off instead of giving them the finger and cutting them back. I will smile and turn the other tire.
That sounds good to me.
Bye now. Thanks for being
Bye-bye.
With us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Michael Savage, a host like no other.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Libsyn Ads. Go to libsynads.com now. That's libsynads.com.
I rarely read religious people's stuff on the show because this is not a religious podcast per se. And I'm not a preacher. I'm not proselytizing. And I wanted to read to you something that a orthodox, he's considered one of the great Kabbalists of the world today. And it came to me from a friend. And his name is Rabbi Abraham Greenbaum. And he's writing about, wait, before you hang up, before you stop listening to the podcast, wait until you hear him speak about Biden, the vaccine mandates, and the world. And it's Letter from Jerusalem by Rabbi Avraham Ban Yaakov. And he says, Dear Rabbi, he's writing it to another rabbi. He says, several people who read my previous letter from Jerusalem sent 5 weeks ago wrote back with some very positive reactions, yet one or two found reason to take offense on the grounds that, quote, rabbis should not meddle in politics, angrily demanding to be unsubscribed. This simply underlines the deep polarization in today's world. However, recently passed my 72nd birthday, I think I may give myself the license to say directly and openly what I believe. He says, if you care to listen, you're most welcome. While anyone who wants to unsubscribe is at liberty to do so, will cause me no offense. Listen to what he has to say about the vaccines. Since that last letter 5 weeks ago, a key issue has been the unashamedly tyrannical forced vaccine mandates now being imposed by many governments across the world, from France, Britain, and the USA to Australia, New Zealand. The latter two having been exceptionally harsh in their COVID response. Now, remember, this is coming from a very religious Jewish guy who's a Kabbalist, which means a mystical Jew. You wouldn't hear this from a Reform Jewish rabbi. They'd line up for the vaccine and say, thank you. You want to give me 12 vaccines? I'll take them. He goes on. In the USA, the Biden administration's ruthless, vaccine mandate campaign is but one prong of his overall war against America, terrorizing the population into surrendering their last surviving freedoms while bringing down the political system through dilution of the population with illegal immigrants, weighting the electorate in favor of permanent Democrat government, destruction of American agriculture industry, inflation and economic havoc, subversion of the police, armed forces, and teachers at all levels, through the interminable promotion of woke ideology and the open persecution of political opponents using all the cutting-edge methods of the postmodern police state. The immensity of Biden's Afghanistan debacle, says the rabbi, is daily becoming clearer both in terms of the needless deaths and human suffering caused by top-level negligence, if not willfully, as well as in terms of the international strategic implications of his surrender to the Taliban, thereby emboldening Muslim terrorists across the world while giving China and Iran greatly expanded power and influence. Meanwhile, France and Germany plan Europe's first joint army as they saber-rattle against the Russian bogey. Ukraine taunts Belarus, China taunts Taiwan, and the short break from wars and tension we enjoyed during the years of the presidency of Donald Trump has come to a bitter end. This is coming from a highly religious rabbi. Can America survive, he asks. Nearly 80 years ago, America took the leading role in freeing the world from the Nazi devil. However, with the enormous social and cultural changes in the country since then, it is now an open question whether the classic America cherished by those who voted for a second term for Donald Trump can survive the pernicious deep state war against it or not. From time to time, someone asks if there will be a civil war. A stupid question because the war is already on in full force right now. Except that it is invisible to the vast section of the population that is bewitched by mainstream media-induced mass hypnosis. Those who believe in the original American dream are by and large upright and moral people. But the big-time, super-rich, and powerful global gangsters, who are now carefully fostering the still-secret embryonic world government, are always many steps ahead of the righteous, having endless financial resources, prestigious so-called research institutes, think tanks, and so-called charitable foundations, gangs of deep state agents embedded everywhere, together with big bank corporate and mainstream media collaborators, as well as hosts of useful idiots throughout the population. Only the Almighty is well ahead of the wicked and sees ahead to their coming downfall. That's what the rabbi said. Oh boy, do I hope he's right. I'll go on. I'm going to quote him now again. It is a fact of life that those who are truly hardworking and successful inevitably attract the resentful, jealous, evil eye of others who feel they have been unlucky and shortchanged, while the poor and persecuted across the world long pine to have a part in the American dream. Many others, prominent among whom are the Muslim extremists, who consider America the great Satan, yet gleefully grab all her handouts and benefits, are only too happy to gloat over her woes and losses and hurl accusations and insults. We need pay no attention whatever to their castigations. Yet at this critical juncture in the history of America, people of genuine faith and traditional values need to reflect carefully on the sins and moral failures that have become rampant across much of the country, if only in order to cleanse and separate themselves from them. America's destructive post-World War II wars and subversive activities against many other countries, while ravaging their resources, cannot be blamed upon the ordinary U.S. citizens or upon the unfortunate soldiers whose lives were lost or ruined for the sake of the agendas of the super rich and powerful elites. Clearly, America's official, loudly advertised quest to promote so-called freedom and democracy in other countries was mostly a guise for propping up corrupt regimes favorable to the interests of those elites. I will go on. Over the course of many decades, the traditional, hardworking, ethical, hardworking, frugal American has been brashly upstaged by the extravagant, wasteful homo consumens, the obedient consumer, particularly if young, who is immensely more profitable business-wise. Through the subversion of the education system and mass media, many sections of the population now display total disregard for the basic norms of civilized society and the sanctity of human life, as evidenced in the flood of abortions of advanced embryos or the endless violent assaults and murders in many parts of the country. A shameless sexual license prevails all over, actively promoted by school and university teachers, the media, and entertainment industry. There is widespread corruption throughout the legal system, judiciary, and police. A leading symptom of the cultural cancer that has metastasized across the country is the plague of foul language, cursing, and ruthless denigration of all who think differently that infects virtually all public discourse, including politics among so-called celebrities on the mass media and internet. Meanwhile, the remaining vestiges of religion are largely commercialized, and true fear of God is almost entirely absent. He asks, what are we to do? You and I are quite unlikely to be able change all the millions of Americans who have fallen victim to mass media mind control and are racing like lemmings to self-destruction. Quote, if I am not for myself, who is for me? Unquote. Each and every one of us must see this world situation as God's direct personal call to each of us individually, because in his inscrutable wisdom, he has planted our souls in our present incarnation precisely in the time and place where we are. Wow. If we cannot change or save the whole world, we can strive to change ourselves for the better and at least save our own souls and those of the people we can influence. Each and every one of us has much for which to repent, be it selfishness, pride, arrogance, anger, cruelty, jealousy, laziness, wastefulness, the pursuit of vanity, and many others. We need to separate ourselves from the surrounding profane culture and embrace the nobility of the priests of God that we truly are, cleansing ourselves of evil traits and impure speech. Within our own spheres of activity, influence in the home, in the family, and community at work, wherever possible, we need, through acts of kindness, loving outreach, listening, and mutual understanding, to build and strengthen the social fabric at the grassroots in order to overcome the divisiveness that our enemies are fomenting. Our greatest priority must be to protect, immunize, and save our children, grandchildren, nephews, nieces, pupils, students, and all the precious young in our communities from the unremitting, savage, invasive, and deeply penetrating attacks against them by government, public education, big business, and the media, attacks that come straight into their eyes and ears through their very phones. The first commandment of the Torah is to be fruitful and multiply, Genesis 1:28. This does not merely mean to breed humans, for in the words of Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, he says, we all have an obligation to try to make this world a civilized place, a world filled with people who are true humans, children of Adam, as the Torah says, and fill the earth. The world is a civilized place only when filled with true children of Adam, people who possess awareness and knowledge of God. A world without people who know God is a world of desolation and emptiness. Those who do not have this awareness cannot be called children of Adam. And he goes on, and I'll leave that one out and then go on to the last piece of this long quotation, which is rare for the Savage podcast. Is this the end, he asks. Watching for signs of the end of time is now evidently a highly popular activity among people of all kinds of beliefs and backgrounds across the world. Some years back, excitement was aroused by tears seemingly dripping from the western wall of the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. More recently, letters of the divine name have been discerned on the eastern wall of the Temple Mount. With the momentous changes now taking place so rapidly before our very eyes, we may justly wonder, is this it? Shall we see the final redemption in our time? Will our eyes or those of our children and children's children actually behold King Mashiach riding in on his white donkey? We are indeed obliged to wait and hope for his coming every day in accordance with the 12th to the 13th principles of Torah faith, which says, I believe with perfect faith in the coming of the Messiah, and even though he may delay, nonetheless, I wait every day for his coming, unquote. The rabbi goes on and says, while we wait, we are not supposed to sit around getting drunk on vodka. Rather, like all the righteous and all the past generations, who because of their foreordained time and place were unable to receive the Messiah in their lifetime in this world, our task is to continue each one in our simple service of God with his commandments. And he tells us to follow the commandments and goes on about the return of the Messiah. And he says, while this may not appear to be on the cards in the short-term foreseeable future, we may well be surprised sooner or later because the destruction of sinful Rome, that is the Vatican, is the avowed goal of Iran, the Taliban, and numerous other Islamic groups. With present-day intercontinental ballistic missiles, this would not prove too great a challenge for those inspired by 9/11 and emboldened by Biden's gift of Afghanistan. Christians have been all but eliminated in many Muslim countries. What was once Christian Europe is no more. The goal of Biden and his controllers is likewise to erase any kind of meaningful Christianity, or indeed any kind of meaningful faith from America. As God's soldiers and warriors in this dire world situation, our task and mission are to spread the light of his Torah to whomever we can, wherever and whenever we can. I wish you a good and blessed month and Shabbat Shalom, Rabbi Avraham Ben Yaakov. I'm Michael Savage. Share this with 10 friends. Well, thank you very much for listening to today's podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it and learned something from it. We have about 400 other episodes available for you to listen to absolutely free. You can go back into our vast library of podcasts and listen to any one of them at any time. And remember this, if you want to listen to my podcast ad-free, sign up for the Savage Premium Membership and get access to ad-free podcasts as well as some premium content from our Savage Archives. How do you sign up for those ad-free podcasts? Please visit michaelsavage.com for a link. Again, thank you for your listenership. This is Michael Savage.